Thank you. We're joined as usual by renowned public radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
And we're pleased to welcome back as our guest, former Governor Lincoln Chafee. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ian. Good morning.
Our guest, Lincoln Chafee, has reemerged on Rhode Island's public scene with a series of interviews over recent months. The thinking is that you're contemplating a possible run for governor next year. Let me ask you, Governor Chafee, when you left office in 2015, your approval ratings were not so great in the mid-20s. You didn't find a lot of support for your presidential campaign last year. Are you considering a campaign for governor next year? And if so, why would you do that?
Well, I think as Rhode Islanders look back on my 4 years as governor, they're going to reflect positively. And certainly the unemployment rate was the biggest drop over my four budgets of any state except Nevada. So the best of any state but one. And got gay marriage, marriage equality through. All my departments were functioning well. I had surpluses in 4 years. We had money to the cities and towns, the distressed communities. We helped with the state institutions of higher education, University of Rhode Island, Rhode Island College, CCRI. So we had the trains running on time. We had surpluses and accomplished things. And now as you look what's happening between the rollout of the tourism campaign, Cooler and Warmer, the UHIP debacle, and now the fact that there's a $100-some million budget deficit and $60 million in the current year, the governor's just not getting the trains to run on time. She's not taking care of the business of making sure you have surpluses. So I think there's opportunity for Rhode Islanders to have the discussions that need to be had as we look at who's going to lead our state.
And before we move on to Scott and Maureen, when will you definitively decide whether you're going to run for governor next year?
Well, the filing deadline is in June of 2018, and that's the deadline. That's the final deadline, sometime before then.
Maureen?
First of all, what party will you run under? Are you going to continue? Are you going to change? Are you going to continue to be a Democrat?
Good question, Maureen. I'm considering everything on that. I'm a Democrat now. The National Democratic Party made their choice and really wasn't interested in any competition. It seems to be that happening now with this choice for governor. The Democratic Governors Association, the DGA, is running ads for free tuition when there's a huge budget deficit. It just doesn't make any sense.
So you might be switching back.
I have to think about what's most effective to represent Rhode Island and the issues. If it's going to be a tilted playing field with the Democratic Party, I've been through that once. And certainly Senator Sanders, after he emerged as the main contender to Hillary Clinton, he would say the same thing. It was an unfair playing field. The CNN issues were being given. Donna Brazile was giving answers to Hillary Clinton. I mean, it was an unfair playing field. Debbie Wasserman Schultz was the tilting the Democratic Party to one candidate. And that's how we ended up with Donald Trump.
So when will you let us know what party you're going to belong to?
Sometime before June of 18.
Scott, if Lincoln Chafee gets into the governor's race next year, how will that affect the equation in your view?
Well, it depends what he decides to do. We don't know yet whether he's going to be a Republican, a Democrat.
Not a Republican.
Okay, a Democrat or an independent. Obviously, it's a much different calculus. If he would run as a Democrat, that would mean a primary against the incumbent, Gina Raimondo. An independent opens up a whole other avenue where he wouldn't have to fight a primary. So I guess that's a political calculus you'll have to make. I just do wonder, Governor, at some point, do you wonder if voters kind of think, is this guy a chameleon on a plaid couch? I don't know what he is. He's been a Republican, a Democrat, and an independent. I mean, at what point does that stop giving confidence to the voters where they're thinking that this guy is just an opportunist? He's just trying to figure out which way the wind blows and which way he can best win.
Well, I've always been exactly the same. I said in the debate, a block of granite, and that is true. And I've always been very fiscally conservative. I'm going to spend the taxpayers' dollars like it was my own dollar. I've always been that way. I've been in public service for 30 years, and my record will reflect accurately that I will look after your money just as if it were my money. But I'm very socially liberal. I want people to live their life as they see best and be happy. That has never changed and never will change. And where that fits for the political party, the reason I left the Republican Party more than any other issue were the tax cuts that favored the wealthy, that brought back deficits, that then led us to the Great Depression of 08. And more than any other issue, is abandoning our fiscal responsibility, which Republicans used to be known for. The Democrats were picking up when I was in the Senate, picking up the fiscal responsibility mantle.
Well, let's talk about fiscal responsibility in the context of the State House. House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello's proposal to eliminate the car tax over 6 years got an initial hearing this week. Supporters like Providence Mayor Jorge Lorza and Central Falls Mayor James Yosa say phasing out the car tax would offer real relief to cash-strapped residents. But there are some critics who question where are the specifics about how this will be paid for and might that money be spent in other ways. Governor Chafee, do you support this proposal to phase out the car tax?
The property tax is one of the most difficult taxes to pay. And any time you can give property tax relief, which the car tax is one, that's a good thing. So if we can do it, and the key word is sustainable, because Tony Perez and back in the 90s, they tried to eliminate the car tax, and then it came back once the crash of 08 hit. All the burden was put back on the cities and towns. So it's got to be sustainable. The commitment has to be there for the long term to help out the Central Falls, the Providence, the Woonsockets, the Warwicks, the Westerlies.
Yes or no, do you support Speaker Mattiello's plan?
We have a huge deficit, and if it's done incrementally and the sustainability is there, that's a good thing.
Scott, you've raised questions about whether this is sustainable. How do you see the outlook?
I'll tell you, if I was a Republican, I know what I'd do. I'd say, yes, I'm for this, with the proviso that this goes to the voters at the next general election, put it in the Constitution. If the voters really want it, make it a constitutional amendment. And that means the only way, by the way, that you could ensure this is a lockbox that some future legislature cannot mess with it, that it would have to be paid.
And putting it to the voters for a constitutional amendment was suggested last week by our guest here, Tony Perez, who was House Finance Chairman back when the car tax phase-out was initially implemented. What do you say, Maureen?
Look, I think that we have to have leadership. I think that if they can come up with a plan that goes over a six-year period that sounds reasonable, we cannot know if there's going to be another great recession. But acting in good faith and stepping up to the plate and providing leadership is what we need. You know, I think it's a ruse to say, oh, well, we'll leave it to the voters. I think legislators and leaders ought to be able to decide this and take the heat. If, in fact, things take an they could put mandates in the legislation to provide for some sort of circumstances. But the idea of throwing it back to the voters, I don't think it's good leadership.
We're almost out of time here. But before we go, Governor Chafee, I'd like to ask you about former FBI Director James Comey's testimony in Congress yesterday. How damaging do you see this as being for President Trump?
It's not good for President Trump, but I will say that as I watch the hearings and listen to them, it seems as though there's a sledgehammer out on this issue, on the Russian issue for President Trump. And as I looked at them and watched these hearings, I always thought, why weren't we having the same scrutiny on the Bush-Cheney mistake of taking, the biggest mistake in American history, taking us into the Iraq War? Why weren't the same media scrutiny every day on Russia? And I think Russia did not interfere with our elections. That was a feather duster approach by the media on Bush and Cheney getting us into Iraq and all those casualties and the cost of that war and the Syrian conflict and ISIS and the refugees that are flooding into Europe, all because of that mistake. And there was never the same kind of criticism of Bush and Cheney that we're seeing on President Trump. So it just perplexes me. Why are we so obsessed with this Russian issue? I call it a non-issue.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott?
Great to be here.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And former Governor Lincoln Chafee.
Thank you, Ian.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, follow our website at ripr.org.